Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. CJ Evolution, episode 64, Patrick here. I am very excited for my next guest. My next guest is named Virginia Fristeri Sollers, and she wrote a book, And Some Will Triumph. It is stories of the mentally ill in corrections and the nurses that care for them. And welcome, Virginia. How are you doing? Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, we are excited to have you on, Virginia. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and moved to California to actually work at Orange County Jail. So I was a psychiatric nurse for 36 years, 26 within a jail system, a large jail system in Orange County, California.
Oh, wow. So all that time working in the jail system as a psychiatric nurse, correct?
Yes, it was fascinating.
Oh, I bet. I mean, now you know, Virginia, I'm a cop, so I see it different than obviously you see.
Correct.
So, I commend you for doing that tough job. My mom was a psychiatric nurse in Colorado for many years, and she worked in the Denver County Jail. So, I commend you for all your years of service.
Thank you, as I do you. one thing, working in the jail system was the safest place I ever worked. I didn't have to do any takedowns, although I did do one because I was fast. Than the deputies, but we were very well cared for.
Well, and I've always said that, and you know this, you have to have just very good communication skills to work in a jail because it's all about de-escalation. You know, it's all about not amping people up, but de-escalating to the best you can. So you really have to have good communication skills. What prompted you to become a psychiatric nurse? How did you get that calling?
Well, I've always had an interest in why people do things, the choices that they make. Mm-hmm. And I did take psychology in college, but I think the main reason was I suffered from depression and obsessive compulsive disorder since a child. Mm-hmm. And I thought that experience would help me to be more empathetic towards those people. So, it was heartfelt, working with them.
Sure. Now, what prompted you to write the book?
Well, I wanted to tell people, let me tell you a little bit about the book, okay?
Okay, sure, go ahead.
And Some Will Triumph relates the journey of Elizabeth, a compassionate psychiatric nurse who comes to California from New York, which is my story, with her teenage daughter to work in the fictional Rainey Correctional Facility. She finds herself interacting with some of society's most troubled and challenging inmates and shows how they must at times fight the system to give the best care to her patients. Elizabeth tells the stories of both the psychiatric inmates as well as the nurses who have problems in their lives as well. Since the book is based on my professional experience, it is an insider's look into the minds of psychiatric inmates, revealing their secrets, their regrets, frustration, and hopes, and how they cope with their life in jail. Mm-hmm. But my book is more than the story. It explains the many mental health disorders in a manner that anyone can understand, points out the broken mental health system, and describes some of the reasons why the mentally ill are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So, why did I write the book? Well, I wanted people to know what we went through as nurses. Mm-hmm. Working in the jail, I mean, it's really different because you're working with criminals and sometimes you're working with people who have committed violent crimes.
Of course.
It's like with me and child molesters. I had a really hard time dealing with child molesters because, I had a teenage daughter. I'm a woman,
Sure.
And that was one of the ones I really had difficulty working with, but you have to separate yourself from their crime in order to give them care. And that's hard to do. It's hard detaching yourself, but you learn to do it because these are people that need help.
Sure, sure. And I remember hearing stories similar to yours, Virginia, from my mom growing up about, she said the same exact thing you just said, where, you know, she was a wife, a mother, and she would say the same thing, where she had to separate herself and provide these people the treatment they needed. So,
right.
Now, you indicated that, you know, some of the literature you sent to me, that the justice system has becoming a dumping ground for the mentally ill. Can you explain that a little bit more? Why do you think this is happening? Because I agree with you. It is becoming a dumping ground. Why is this happening in our justice system?
Well, because there's no more institutions for the mentally ill. And a lot of families can't take care of them because they won't take their meds, they become aggressive, and a lot of them end up on the street. And what happens is that, you know, even if they're in with their families or whatever, they get called by, the police get called out, okay? Mm-hmm. And now here they are in the field, and sometimes they call like the PERT team, the psychiatric emergency team, and the crisis, the CAP team is what we have out here. And they come out, and they sometimes don't even help them because a lot of times they have just clinicians. They don't have psychiatric nurses, and the clinicians are just not set up to do crisis intervention. Okay, so you have this officer out in the field, and now he's dealing with a psychiatric inmate. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, here in California, in Orange County, with a population of over 3 million, we have exactly 10 beds for the acute psychiatric patients with no insurance. Mm-hmm. And that facility doesn't take mentally ill people, does not take medically ill people or the elderly. Mm-hmm. So now you have this police officer in the field. Is he going to bring an ETS, is our emergency services here, ETS.
Mm-hmm.
Is bring them to ETS where they're going to ask them for medical clearance? Because they even asked us at the jail for medical clearance when we had a doctor available.
Mm-hmm.
So here they are, they're stuck with this patient. They end up in the emergency room. They end up, you know, out of the field where they're supposed to be. And so what are they going to do with these people? They're going to bring them to the jail because we have to take them.
But if like out in California, what you're used to, I mean, there's got to be some charges before they bring him to jail, correct?
Well,
I mean,
you know, with the home, well, if they can't 5150 them, you know, then, and even, you know what, they just bring them to the jail because it's easier to deal with them from the jail. They give them charges as you know, resisting arrest is usually what's brought in for. And the homeless are brought in for crimes of survival, like, you know, stealing something, maybe sometimes food, you know. So
sure.
So they end up, and then with the homeless, that's another whole situation because you bring them in, okay, and for the minor crimes, the citing releases, okay? So they get fingerprinted, they get processed, and they're given a court date. Now, half these people don't even know what year it is.
Sure.
They're definitely not going to come, you know, they're definitely not going to come to court because they have no idea what day it is, what month it is, what year it is. And so then it becomes a warrant. And
sure.
Then they come back, and then they go to court. And so it just becomes a revolving door.
Of course, yeah.
Now, with acutely mentally ill, this is a real problem out in the fields because if they don't have insurance, then what are they going to do with these people? You know, what are they going to do? And again, ETS doesn't want to take them, and it's the same thing. But now they're starting, you know, law is law, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, they did Kendra's Law in New York, and Laura's Law is just starting here now on January 1st, 2017 in California.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, I really don't see how that's going to work very well, though, because that's for the acutely psychotic. And, you know, the thinking, okay, it's going to be where it's going to be where they're mandatory, court mandated to take medications, and court mandated to go to certain facilities on an outpatient basis.
Yeah.
But I don't see them doing that. They say it works, but I really have to look into it more because I don't see it as the way to go. I still think the way to go would be to have institutions where some of these people can have long-term care.
And I think, you know, I mean, the courts can order anything they want, and you know, from my view, I see it all the time. You know, as a cop, the courts order, you know, for instance, somebody to not drink because they got in trouble for maybe drinking, or it doesn't mean they're going to do it. Like you said, I mean, they're going to, you know, even unless somebody is holding their hand and watching them, you know, go do this, then the court is, so if they don't do it, they're in contempt of court, and then they have a warrant. Now,
right.
You know, I mean, and the one thing that it, you know, cause I've been a police officer for 21 years, Victoria, and I can attest to the rise in calls for the mentally ill since I've been a police officer. I mean, it seems like it's just skyrocketing. It's going through the roof. I mean, and I don't, and it's probably what you said. There's not many institutions anymore to help these people.
Aren't any.
Yeah. Well, I think we have one here where I'm at, and it's a short-term care, but at least we have somewhere to bring the people that are, you know, suicidal and having some problems. So, but right. I think you're right. Those are few and far between.
Right. Because, and then as soon as the stabilized, they're out on the street again.
Sure. Sure. Now, you indicated that half of all police shootings involve someone with a mental health problem. You indicated drugs, psychotic state, et cetera. And this, there has to be a better way. What do you think the better way is? I mean, any suggestions on?
First of all, number one, the police aren't trained to mm-hmm. deal with the mentally ill. In California, out of their 664 hours of training, they actually get 3 hours to deal with the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're starting to bring in the CIT training, but again, what started out as a 40-hour program is now being melted down into a 6-hour program.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it takes years to deal with the mentally ill. I have 36 years experience.
Yeah.
But it took me, I mean, and the first time in my book, which I bring out, the first time I saw a psychotic person on a psychiatric floor, I thought the person was possessed by a devil.
Sure.
So it can be very frightening, you know, if you don't know how to deal with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if the police officer becomes aggressive with them or, you know, makes threatening gestures or, you know, makes threats, then they're just going to escalate the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Virginia. I'm sorry.
No, and I would just like to see psychiatric nurses on the scene because I worked a mobile unit back east, mm-hmm. and we used to go into condemned buildings and we would go into places, you know, their homes, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, I was able to de-escalate a severe situation, like where even guns and knives were there. You know, before the police could actually handcuff the person. So,
well, I think in some instances, in speaking from a law enforcement perspective, you probably know this, but things happen very, very rapidly sometimes, and they happen within minutes, seconds sometimes.
Right.
So unless psychiatric nurses are going to be driving around with police officers.
Which is actually a lot of times what we did.
Oh, okay. You know, here in Colorado, I mean, we're not doing that right now. And I'm not saying it's not a bad idea. Well, it comes down to a money issue too, Victoria, you know that. And who's going to fund that? And, you know, is it feasible to have nurses, you know, riding along with officers?
Right. But the thing is also, if they know, I mean, a lot of times most of these people are known, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because for a while, the police officers know when they're dealing with a mental health person, either from the call or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the psychiatric nurse can just meet them there.
Sure.
You know, but what I'm saying? There's ways of doing it. I mean, sure. They should have, you know, they should have like, you know, people that they know. I mean, it should, I mean, it's the same people that are getting, they're getting called out on most of
sure.
the time.
Sure. And I would agree with that. We have a lot of repeat calls to the same people, but there is a percentage, in my experience that we don't know what we're walking into. And you know, and that does happen frequently, where we might not have any contact with this person before, and they're having an episode or they're going through some sort of you know, challenges, and the police don't know what they're walking into. And to those are the episodes that I'm talking about, and they happen frequently, where the cops, you know, don't have time to call you know, a nurse such as yourself or some other team, because it's unfolding so rapidly.
And you're stuck with those.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, you just have to go in. I mean, there's still things you can do. I mean,
sure.
to de-escalate the situation, you need to, you know, talk in a calm manner. If you got someone who's paranoid, make sure you tell them that they're safe, that you're not going to hurt them.
Exactly.
Build some kind of rapport with them. You know, my name is so-and-so. I'm here to help you. You know, this is what's going on, you know, so that they're listening to you. I mean, a lot of times these people are hearing voices in their head, and it's hard for them to attend to what you're saying. So you have to, you know, constantly say the same thing over and over and over again until you get their attention. I mean, if coming at you with a knife, then you're pretty much stuck.
Sure. And we were talking before we started, and you hit it, Virginia, on the head. You know, communication is the key, right? I mean, I would rather talk my way out of anything than to use any kind of force, and I think that's the objective.
But I think a lot of times you have police, I mean, you're a seasoned police officer.
Sure.
That's someone who's not seasoned, you know?
Sure.
I mean, they go out there, they get scared, right? I mean, mentally... Mm. People are very scary.
Exactly.
You know, not what they're going to do.
And just so you know, and I think CIT is a great pro. I went through it here in Colorado. It was a 40-hour program.
Right.
And, you know, for those of you who don't know what CIT is, they bring in professional actors. At least they did it where when I went through it, Virginia, and they bring in actors, and they bring in people who really, really get into the role of people that need help, and we as officers have to talk our way through the scenario.
Right.
So, excellent.
I think the newer officers that I saw that started to come into the jail, I mean, years ago we had a bad time in the jail because it wasn't a good place to be. It was horrible, and there was a lot of stuff going on. But now I see people with degrees, a lot of the deputies coming in are, you know, veterans of Iraq, and they also have some kind of psychology background. Mm-hmm. And so for them, it, you know, for us, it was great to have them on board because they knew exactly what we were doing, and they would back off and let us go in and do what we needed to do.
Now, you mentioned CIT training, which is crisis intervention training. Virginia, is there any other training that you would recommend for law enforcement out there, first responders?
You know, any kind of psychology degrees would be, I mean, not
sure.
degree, but just anything, like just taking abnormal psychology as a college class. You know, you could take it online. It would give you some idea of what, you know, what's out there and how to deal with them.
Sure. And how big is the, because I'm preaching to the choir, but is it true that corrections is the main provider of mental health care for certain people?
Yes.
And is it just why is that? How did we come to that point?
Because there's no place to put them. They end up in jail because they commit crimes. You know, they're out there, and, you know, you get a paranoid person on the street, and you know, someone says something to them, and they push them, and, you know, they come to jail.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is. Jail's the way to go.
And I see it on my end, too, from a police officer, and you even said it, where, you know, they get arrested for something, they go in, they get medicated, they get their meds, they come back out on the street, and then it's almost like you said, it's a cycle.
It is a cycle. It's horrible.
Yeah. Now, you're in front of a graduating class of cadets, Virginia, and you're talking about mental health issues. You're talking about, you know, how to deal with mental health people or people with mental health issues as that law enforcement officers come into contact with. What are you going to give these brand new officers advice on? How it's just a couple nuggets of wisdom from an expert like you.
Okay. You know, I would always, you know, just being in mental health, you know, you try not to escalate the situation by arguing or anything like that. If I felt the patient, see, again, if it's just, do you go out with one officer? Because it's hard. With one officer, you really don't have any kind of show of force, mm-hmm. which helps, you know, with a mentally ill person, you know, they'll think they'll be able to take you if you're one person, mm-hmm. you know, just the delusional or hearing voices. But, you know, if you had some kind of show of force, they'll back down, mm-hmm. you know, and always talk like in a calm manner. Don't rush them. Stay far away. Give them room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we train our officers. Of course, we're not experts like you, but we do. With our newer officers, you know, we do teach that, you know, a lot where, you know, it's all in the approach. It's all in your communication. You don't want to, you know, if somebody's being aggressive to you, yes, you know, you got to kind of do what you have to do sometimes. But in my experience, Virginia, it all comes down to the communication, like you said. And if you are calm with people.
Back off a little bit. Sometimes
yeah.
Just give them space
yeah.
and say, Hey, you know what? Hi, Ronald, or whatever his name is. Hi, I'm here for you. I'm here. Mm-hmm. I think you're in trouble. Can mm-hmm. you tell me what's going on?
Yeah.
Sometimes something just as simple as that can work.
Sure. Now, if people want to find your great book, where can they find it, Virginia?
They could find it, Ex Libris published it, but they could also find it on Amazon and okay. BarnesandNoble.com. If you go to my website at www.virginiasalas.net, they'll be able to find all the information.
Excellent. What about social media, Virginia, if people want to reach out to you?
Yeah, I also have a blog going there. So, you know, there's stuff on obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, depression. So, you know, it's a nice little thing and a lot of good information on my blogs.
Well, excellent. Anything else you want to add, ma'am?
Oh, let me think. there was something, but I can't remember.
That's yeah. okay. I kind of put you on the spot right there.
No, that's okay. You know what I wanted to mention, actually? You know, some changes I would like to make. You know, we had, you know, I was in Orange County Jail, so we had three facilities. We had two satellite facilities besides the main jail. It was huge. I mean, it's huge, just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of inmates. I think at one
sure.
time we had up to 8,000 inmates.
Wow.
And at Lacey, we had a animal shelter right next door. And I happen to be an animal lover. And my pet project would have been, and I try to bring it to them, but they wouldn't hear it, is having the inmates care for animals in shelters. I know they've done that in state prison, Texas being one, and have had good results.
Yeah.
I feel this would benefit both the inmate, who would have something constructive to do with their time and make them responsible for something, increasing their self-worth. And it would help people who are depressed and with their anxiety. And they can learn to train the animals, which is something they can do on the outside when they get out. And mm-hmm. The animals themselves would have a better chance of obtaining a home.
Yeah, and I've heard that before, and I think that's a great idea. I've also heard, and maybe you have, where inmates, you know, they grow gardens and they're doing all kinds of stuff like that, you know, supervised, you know, of course, but they're doing that because it is about, you know, getting that self-worth and feeling important. So I think that's very important.
Yeah. And, you know, in the jail, you're really stuck. In prison, you have more, you know, you have more to do because you, mm-hmm. you know, there's, but most of these psychiatric inmates in the jail, they're shut down 24/7. I mean, because they're acting out or whatever, they're in a safety gown, they're in a safety cell, and they don't really get out.
Now in the prison system, Virginia, I mean, they are receiving treatment, correct? I mean, how often, I guess it depends on the person, but, you know, how often do they?
Yeah, definitely, they're receiving treatment, but they don't have to, you know, unless they're a danger to themselves or a danger mm-hmm. to others, you can, or so, even if they're really so psychotic that they're not eating for a long period of time, we can, you know, give them forced medicines, but other than that, we can't. So you can have a person just like a schizophrenic, a paranoid schizophrenic, you know, sitting in a corner forever.
Yes.
You know, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, Virginia Sollers, I appreciate it very much, ma'am. I know you're busy. Thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast. And for everybody, go out and pick up Virginia's book. It's a great read. Virginia Sollers, the book is called And Some Will Triumph. I appreciate you coming on today, ma'am.
Thank you so much for having me, Patrick.
Oh, you're very welcome, and you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, great. Thanks.
All right, Virginia.
Of two more books, though.
Okay. Well, take care, ma'am, and I will talk with you soon.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.